This is the Blueprint Podcast, bringing you the latest in cyber defense and security operations from top Blue Team leaders. Blueprint is brought to you by the SANS Institute and is hosted by SANS Senior Instructor John Hubbard. And now, here's your host, John Hubbard.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Blueprint Podcast. Again, I am your host, John Hubbard, and we have with us again our authors of 11 Strategies of a World-Class Cybersecurity Operations Center, Kat Nerler, Ingrid Parker, and Carson Zimmerman. Welcome back to you all. So we are going to get into a topic today that I think is going to be a very, very interesting one, because there's a lot of kind of high-level information out there, but I'm sure listeners are going to be interested in hearing some of your low-level practical advice on this, and that is cyber threat intelligence, right? This chapter is called Illuminate Adversaries with CTI, and I always love talking about CTI myself because I am not a CTI expert. I'm a SOC person. You know, I know that's a whole different level of expertise and a different thing that people turn into entire careers, and that is not what I've done. Hang out with those people, but that's about it, and always pick up some awesome stuff when I talk to people who know CTI. And also, a lot of people are confused at just what it is, what it looks like, and what are they aiming for. So really excited to get into some of those kind of factors when it comes to CTI. So to kick off the episode here, one of the first things I want to ask is, what is CTI, and why is it something that's important for us all to have?
Yeah, I'll start there, John. Great to be here again. Cyber threat intelligence, we gave a very lofty definition of it in the book. It's pretty long, actually. And it was the combination of smashing together several different sources for that definition. But in a nutshell, it's really any kind of information that can help you make decisions, right? So just boiling it down to, is it technology information? Is it adversary information? Those kinds of things. It's anything you can use that will help you either find more adversaries in your environment or alert you that this could happen to you. And so that's the easiest way to define and talk about CTI.
Who is making the decisions, and what kind of decisions would they be making if you have good CTI?
Okay, that's a really, really excellent question. So if you're an incident responder, you're going to want real tactical, what do I actually do with the information I have kind of information. So that's going to be a different kind of intelligence than, say, informing your CEO or your business lead or someone who's not technical to say, these criminals are actually accessing our pay information. So those are different kinds of levels of CTI. And that's the whole thing about CTI and why it's so confusing, because there's different levels. There's, if you go to your DOD and intelligence community kind of stuff, you have tactical, you have strategic, and you have operational kinds of intelligence, and they're all used to do different kinds of things.
So maybe we should start there. Where, in terms of strategic intelligence, how would you describe what that is?
So strategic is really taking that long view. It's often something that you think about from more of a government or a nation state perspective. And it's really understanding the overall intent and capabilities and how that can impact you from a risk perspective. And so thinking about, again, coming mostly from a government perspective, how does the actions of another country fit into what you're trying to do? Whether that's with negotiations, whether that's financially, whether that's, unfortunately with wars or other types of things, we are now seeing that, cyber is part of actions that are happening around the globe as countries are engaging with each other. It can also be strategic within companies, though. You can see, maybe there's an adversary that has an intent to disrupt a market or wants to get into understanding your knowledge around a negotiation when you're trying to do an acquisition. All of those types of things, really understanding that high level, what are they trying to do? Why are they trying to do it? Is going to set you up to think about them from a long-term risk perspective.
Makes John, sense. I'll offer, since we want to try and be concrete in this chapter, I'll offer a couple examples to go along with what Ingrid was talking about. We recognize that there are typically, particularly in very large nations, multiple different adversaries that we associate and attribute to a specific nation. And I'm not going to mention names in today's podcast, simply to say that there are multiple adversaries that are associated with nation state in interest for a given country. And understanding, just like what Ingrid was talking about, is the motivations for each of those actors is particularly important when we're thinking we're actually in incident response and we're seeing a given adversary, which we have not yet attributed, perform certain actions on objectives or take actions that indicate the motivation where they want to get in the enterprise. And that helps us then make those associations, which we'll probably talk about today as well. And then kind of know what do we need to do next?
Perfect. So we got this high level kind of strategic intelligence that's going to be probably for decision makers and budgetary purposes and stuff, just kind of saying like, who's out there? What do they want? What's the next level down on the like pyramid of detail when it comes to threat intelligence?
So operational would be the next level down, and that is looking at some of the capabilities of your adversaries. So what kinds of tools do they use? Maybe not the exact way they've used a tool, or TTPs, as we call them, tactics, techniques, and procedures. That's going to be more in your tactical. As operational and tactical tend to kind of overlap a lot. I don't think there's any one clear way to look at it, but operational, I look at that middle tier of what are the more general things they use. Do they use networks? Do they come at you through a user? Do they, focus on one kind of activity? And then just to go into the tactical too, the tactical is going to be more about what exactly are they doing? What does it look like? How does it manifest itself in your environment? What are they interested in? It's the very tactical items.
So what would be like an example of a concrete piece of like something you would call tactical intelligence versus maybe something that would be at the operational level?
I'll give a couple examples here, and then I can't wait to see Ingrid, whether they affirm or refute my assertions. When we talk about CTI, the big elephant in the room is people think about long lists of indicators. And we'll talk about long lists as indicators here. But I think in this conversation, we're also thinking about all kinds of other stuff like, what hours out of the day against UTC does a given adversary typically work? Are they known to do false flag operations? Are they motivated for primarily financial reasons versus are they, interested in something like espionage or disruption or things like that? One of the other things I'll offer is I've already introduced bias into our conversation because I started talking about nation states. And one of the things to think about when talking about CTI is we must not just be thinking about nation state associated actors, though they get a lot of fanfare. We should also think about CTI in the context of binning actors that look more like zombies than dragons, meaning, large, highly numerous, unattributed, actors, again, financially motivated might be a very good example, where there's thousands and tens of thousands of them, and trying to attribute any one of those may not be worth our time, but as a class and a group, we can think about what they're up to and make generalizations in the context of both detection and response.
Perfect.
And building on that idea of it's not just nation state, and trying to get more specific, think about something like ransomware. So a tactical would be, hey, they, installed Qbot or some particular piece of malware was their initial, way that they were doing access, through emails or something else, and you know what's happening. At the more operational level, you're really thinking about what is that chain of events? What is likely to happen next? What do you know is in their toolbox? How do they go together? So what can you anticipate and expect that you're going to see from either a particular adversary or a class of adversaries? And then at the more strategic level, that's where you're thinking about what are their objectives? What are they trying to do? Is this a group that is known to just do ransomware? Or are they a group who also steals your data and tries to do a secondary of stealing your data as well as doing ransomware? And so they absolutely build on each other, and understanding all three different levels allows you to decide what actions you're going to take based on that info that you've got.
So if we need all three levels, is it, is there an approach that the average team should take? Are they starting at the tactical level, collecting things until they start to see the bigger picture? Or is it their, you know, CISO talking to another CISO and one being like, hey, did you hear about Group X? And they're like, oh, no, I didn't. And then it kind of filters down in the other direction, a little bit of both. How do we get all those levels?
I think I'll start there. So how to get started is almost a way to look at this, right? So start with your own incident data. So, you know, what have the adversaries or what have the incidents look like that are in your environment? You know, and if you can trend it over time, even better. So are they super, were they hard to find? Were they very sophisticated? Or do they just seem pretty straightforward and easy to deal with? More of a malware kind of thing? Was there ransomware involved? So starting with your own data is probably the best way to start looking at CTI, because the best CTI kind of looks like what you already have, but maybe then you augment it with other sources of information.
I'm going to double down on what Catherine said. I had no surprise. One of the ways I think about how can the SOC distinguish itself among any other member of the IT and cybersecurity apparatus in an enterprise, and that is becoming eloquent and conversant in the CTI that is relevant to its own enterprise, and indeed starting with CTI sourced from its own incident data. This is how other people can look to the SOC as authoritative.
We'll be back after a quick break.
If you're enjoying this episode, then you're undoubtedly interested in building the strongest security operations team that you can. For those who want to go even deeper, did you know that SANS has not one, but two courses that cover security operations centers as well? For the leaders, managers, and directors out there, my co-author Mark Orlando and I offer 551, Building and Leading Security Operations Centers. This course covers building your team, your physical and virtual workspace, getting the right data into your tools, and then focusing on security priorities through everyday execution of important security tasks and building the best SOC team possible. For the technical practitioners out there, my course Sec 450, Blue Team Fundamentals, Security Operations and Analysis is designed to cover everything you need to jump in being the best SOC analyst that you can be. We cover important data types, SOC tools, security logs, malware, analysis technique, automation, and much, much more. In addition, if you want to prove you can deliver the best on any security team, both courses have an accompanying certification available from GIAC. That's the GSOM for 551 and the GSOC for 450. Check out both courses and free demos available on the SANS website. You can get registered today for an in-person course at one of our many events, or go to On Demand and take either class anywhere at your own pace. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I like that. Is there like a particular... Let's see, how can I phrase this? Where, beside your own incident data, really, like where else should we be looking, right? Because yes, of course, we want to be collecting our own, but like, is there, it's going to take a while to build it that way, right? And people don't want to say like, all right, well, I'll wait a year and then maybe I'll have intelligence. what are the secondary sources that people should try to go to if they want to jumpstart a CTI capability?
I'll start. People usually think about news reporting and CTI feeds, which we all have feelings about. I would actually bias first to other SOCs. Friends of the, whoever your SOC's friends are, usually in within a industry vertical or geography or both. Some of the highest fidelity tippers I've seen come from partners who the SOC has personal relationships with. And there are a bajillion other benefits from fostering those relationships as well. But at a high level, I would bias there first.
Any idea how to make those connections if you don't have those kind of already established? Because either you're a small company or you just don't happen to know anyone. Is there a SOC speed dating circuit you can go on, or something where you can, some place that people congregate where you might be able to make those connections?
You know, you can, this may be controversial, but if there are businesses who compete with each other, but don't compete with each other when it comes to security. Mm. So they're major players in competing, you know, if because they're in the same field or the same, they sell the same kinds of products. But what you can do is almost cold call them, you know, from one SOC to another. I've done that. I've done some cold calls because you get some creds just for showing up when you're in a SOC. So yeah, I would start with that, calling other security operation centers.
Yeah.
I'll offer one. ISACs in the United States, ISACs, and both in the United States and other countries, the national cert or regional cert, germane to whatever country you're in, one of their major jobs is ISACs and those certs, CERT, by the way, is to foster those communities.
Yep. And first.org is one of the oldest ones out there. In fact, might be the oldest one out there for SOCs all over the world. CTI is, when it comes to incidents, the incident response teams work very heavily with CTI a lot of times. So,
And I would say even beyond that, although we probably will hit on and caution against things like just ingesting, you know, all the IOCs you can find or anything else, or just using a vendor product that isn't tailored to you. The fact is your vendors probably have CTI teams, you know, for many of your major applications. They're going to put information out that is going to be relevant to the technologies that you're using. Or if you have an MSSP or some sort of organization, they are probably putting some information out. You know, and then certainly looking towards the big vendors like Microsoft and others that you're going to have in your environment, like they're keeping an eye on this. They have huge teams. That's what they do. And so looking to those vendors that are relevant to your organization and seeing what they're putting out can be really valuable as well.
So you're saying if I go to my vendor and I just download a list of everything they know, I'm pretty much good to go then and we can just close up.
Which is why I started with the, but we were cautioned against the downloading a list of all the IOCs.
Yeah, yeah. So that brings me to my next question, right? Is we've kind of said what CTI is, but can we explicitly say what CTI is not, or what is not CTI rather?
Yeah, we'll also get into some of the criteria that helps you judge whether CTI is good CTI or not, and back to the vendor point. But yeah, certainly IP addresses, just, you know, domain addresses, all that list of stuff that I think we have in the book is not CTI by itself, because those are just lists of things. You haven't done any connection with other information. The key to CTI is information that helps you make decisions. An IP address by itself doesn't help you make a decision about, well, what do I do with that? You know, because we know IP addresses are used all the time. And we all know that blocking an IP address is really not going to help you.
Right. And I can personally vouch that the bane of my existence for quite a while was like the threat intel alert that says someone went to a bad IP. And then, okay, now what, right? Let's continue to pull that thread, right? Let's say you do download the list, which is not necessarily a bad thing to do. It's just maybe not CTI, as we're calling it. If you have a SOC that has a full, you know, beautiful, ideal collection of CTI versus a SOC that just has a list, what is a analyst doing in the SOC that has the CTI versus not? Like, how's the workflow look different?
Well, I'm glad you're asking that. I would bring you to one of our prouder things in here, figure 14 in the book. It talks about three different kinds of data coming together. So what makes CTI valuable in information is when you're able to bring that together with your own technical environment, as well as the relevancy to your missions and businesses. So taking information, the CTI, information about your adversary, and knowing what they're going to go after. So if you're concerned about intellectual property, that's something you're going to look at differently than if you're interested in someone taking out your network, right? So those are different kinds of attacks, adversaries, all of the different kinds of threats. And then you look at your technical environment. So does your adversary care about Microsoft Azure or AWS, or do they care more about looking for legacy environments of which you have a lot of legacy types of things, your old school, you know, Microsoft systems or whatever, desktops. So, you know, it's combining the three kinds of informations together to be able to put together that picture to make it useful to you. And that's also how you're going to judge whether the CTI you're getting is helpful or not helpful to you.
I'm going to provide a concrete example of what Catherine just talked about. Let's say you're in retail. The CTI that is of most interest to you is going to be the CTI that pertains to, you know, the attack tiles that have to deal with, quite frankly, operating retail. And one of those pieces, obviously, is going to be malware that runs on point of sale systems that does stuff like retrieve credit card and other transactional data like that. And that really narrows the kinds of CTI feeds that you're going to ingest and really narrows how you're going to apply them to your own telemetry. And that's pretty succinct. And that, I think, is those are the kinds of situations, you know, you want to look for. If you've got, as a SOC, if you have, you know, attributed previous incidents to an adversary that is known to do, destructive type malware, you know, the kind of malware that will just brick your systems, you know, guess what? That's going to really narrow what kind of CTI you want to ingest and then fuse moving forward.
Gotcha. So if you wanted to go shop for CTI that's going to have all this information and it's going to be relevant and all of that, what are the kind of questions that you're maybe asking a vendor that you're considering purchasing threat intelligence from or things like that to assess, right, whether they're going to be the best possible match for your company, your industry?
Yeah, we've got a set of characteristics in the book. The four big ones being, you know, is it actionable? So is there something that you can actually do with this, given the scope and scale of your SOC and the data that you collect? Sometimes you might get really interesting CTI, but if you don't have that particular log, or maybe you don't have a malware analyst who's, you know, on your staff all the time, so you can't act on some of the things that are there, you need to think about that. Timely. So thinking about when do they provide that update and that information, how fast does it come out? And how would you go about ingesting it? You know, is it something where it comes out a week later and then you have to manually type it in? That's just not going to be relevant versus having an API, being able to pull it in and have it fit within your system.
Yeah.
Relevancy and accuracy are two others that we also look at in that space.
Yeah, the relevancy, I think what you want to ask the vendors is how many different customers are they collecting information from that are in your industry, right? So if they don't know anything about manufacturing and that's your business, then that may not be the CTI for you. It's probably okay CTI. It just might be, you know, if you only have so much money, you want to, you know, focus on those that really hit your industry.
Yeah. There's also a lot of repackaging that happens. Yeah. So you do want to think about, you know, where they're getting their information from, because if they're looking at an open source feed and then taking that and just giving it to you, that's different than they're looking at an open source feed and they're adding their own context on top of it and then providing you enriched data that you're getting. So really understanding what the sources are is going to help you understand whether maybe you could just go get that same information yourself or whether they're adding that value that really can make a difference.
John, I would generalize your question, not just to the commercial situation, but any situation where the SOC is considering a given CTI feed. They might be open source and it might be for another SOC, be it a national SOC, an ISAC or what have you. You know, I fondly remember, I'm being facetious here. I fondly remember situations where these coordinating SOCs would aggregate TI from others and redistribute it. And by the time you got it, it was old and so watered down that it basically said something to the equivalent of something bad happened on the internet last month. And it's like, thank you for telling me something bad happened on the internet last month. So just like Ingrid and Catherine are saying, we've got to really focus, you know, what's the provenance and pedigree of that? Is it somebody just repeating something else somebody has said? How much overlap is there? That's actually one good thing to measure, especially if you're in the front end of that, is how much is this overlap with stuff I've already got?
Is there an easy way to do that?
Depends on the systems that you're running. I am writing an anti-join in my mind right now that would do exactly that. If you get that TI in the same place you've got your other TI, you know, look at the percentages of overlap and look at that contextual data that either brings. You might actually down select to a feed that has smaller coverage if the contextual information is much stronger or more accurate.
And I will say there is a lot of overlap with open source feeds. That is a really popular thing that threat vendors will pull in, is open source feeds. So if you're just getting a lot of data, that's not necessarily good. You know, you want good data, not a lot of data. But those open source feeds, I would go back to looking at those. They're freely available on the internet. I think we talk a little bit about them in our book. But looking at those and doing a diff or a comparison with what the vendors are offering you.
Yeah, that's on page 162. There's a whole list of them. We don't endorse any specific feed. Rather, we take the perspective of offering a whole bunch to get started.
Exactly.
Perfect. When you're ingesting this data, and we'll get to platforms in just a second here, but I wanted to ask this question first. Let's say you have, you know, 3-4 different threat feeds of varying sizes, varying sources, and things like that. As a team, looking at those 4 feeds, how are you comparing them against each other? And how are you making the call of which ones are good enough and which ones you might want to get rid of? Like, what kind of metrics or really anything might you use to say, judge one from the other?
I guess what I would start with in something like that is pulling in several feeds at once into your, if you have a correlation engine or if you're writing scripts to be able to look at your data, I pull it in with the existing incident data and your technical environment data to kind of take a look at it and see what's coming up. And I'd run some correlation ideas.
So yeah, there's no doubt about that. I would offer one thought. A lot of people will approach CTI in new and they'll start doing IOC matching, straight IOC matching. And that can be very exciting. And then you get past the, okay, I've got 100,000 hits yesterday on this TI feed. Now what? And all the way to, you know, going back to our point about the best CTI is often CTI that you have produced yourself. Even in the case of an incident where we've got some lo-fis, like some IP addresses that we've known to see associate with an actor C2. And we always, in both these situations, we have to be careful not to just automatically go high severity alerting with just the IOC matching. Some of the best use cases in CTI is where we're fusing IOCs in the context of other signals that together make it much more confident.
And I like to, when we think about CTI, there's the IOCs, but you actually want to understand, you know, those TTPs, the tactics, techniques, and procedures. You want to think about that potentially in as related to the attack framework. You want to think about that from a coverage and collection possibility. You want to think that from a detector possibility. So it's moving from something where you can just take those atomic indicators and put it in your system to something where you can look at it and say, okay, can I use this to maybe customize what I'm looking for in my environment or to help me inform that I need to be getting data, different data because the adversary works in this way, or to create a new detector that is going to be looking for XYZ that we weren't looking for before relevant to your industry. So it's really not just can you automatically put something into your system, which can be valuable, but then you run into the false positive, false negative challenge. It's can you then use that to do more tailored things for the collection and detection that you're doing within your SOC?
Okay, so we're getting all this data that we're downloading from different feeds and different vendors and collecting from our own incident response capabilities, and we need to put it somewhere, right? And we need to make sense of it. Threat intelligence platforms are going to be the answer for that, obviously. But could you speak a little bit about what we're looking for specifically in terms of features, in terms of choosing a threat intelligence platform? How do those kind of make sense of all this data?
I can start. I think when I think about threat intelligence platforms, along with any other major area of the SOC, I want to think about really what our aspirations are and how sophisticated are the SOC's use cases. Let me give a couple concrete examples. There are a very large number of SOCs out there where their aspirations really center around ingesting intel others have created, maybe doing a little bit of light IOC work itself, and fusing that data into the information that they're collecting. In those situations, using the capabilities that are native to their log management or SIM or big data solutions may be sufficient. Organizing IOCs as an ordinary table or set of tables in a big data solution, and then running an inner join on them on every 24 hours might be okay. That might yield some threat hunt, or, you know, some fusion with some other telemetry that by itself is just great. And in that situation, there's not a strong rationale to go and spend a bunch of money or time integrating a pure play tip. There are other SOCs, you'll generally know who you are, where there are multiple people on a regular basis, perhaps every day, who are looking at information of a bespoke nature, usually derived from the SOC's own TTPs, sources and methods, etc., where they need to put that in a place where they communicate around those bespoke findings. And it will feel, they'll feel that way when they move from a line of thinking that's focused around incidents to a line of focus around adversaries and campaigns. And you'll know who you are when you start thinking that way. And it is that point in time where I most strongly advise a platform that is meant specifically for managing threat intel, because it comes to a conversation, not just about importing and fusing IOC lists, but talking about threat intel routinely. And that's where I think it's the strongest situation for having a tip. And that tip, it might be built into your SIM, might be built into your case management system. You might have a pure play product to integrate with those others.
So in your experience, does that conversation kind of emerge as a SOC becomes more mature, or maybe the other way around, a more mature SOC has those conversations? Is there some kind of correlation of the development of CTI there that it naturally ends in, okay, now we know who these groups are, and oh, it's them again, and oh, here's everything we know about them, and an ability to look that kind of thing up?
Yeah, and where that may start is, oh, this seems familiar. I think I've seen this before. And having that persistence of memory. And in particular, one of the areas the SOCs may be challenged is when you've got person A and person B, and they've seen the same thing at separate times, but they don't know it. And it's really cool seeing some case management and SOAR platforms actually help us do that by helping us recognize, oh, I've seen a given entity in this incident. It's flagged that as seen in another incident before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the things I think is a core piece of having a threat intelligence platform is, like, if you see the same thing twice, that's the tool that should be able to point it out, if nothing else, right? Some ability to say that's the item we've run into before, and make those automatic kind of correlations and pass that stuff out. The other thing I was kind of wondering about this, and I get this question all the time as well. This might be one of those, like, throw a grenade and stand back questions. Should we expire indicators out of our threat intelligence platform?
Oh, I want to do this as just a straight yes, no from each of us. So I say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Great. Wow. Not a grenade.
Amazing. When do we do it?
There's no question. There's no question, right? Their IP addresses that or domain names that last only seconds, for crying out loud.
No question. Yeah.
That being said, we have had, like, some detectors that have been sitting around for 3 years and have never fired. And then that ends up becoming the thing that is the only thing that lets you know something happened. So you need to think about but it hadn't made noise for 3 years. And so you need to think about how much noise it's making, how much processing it's taking up, you know, what the fidelity is of what's going to come out of it if it does go off, whether you have other coverage in that area, you know. So kind of moving away from the IOCs, but thinking about detectors as a whole, if you have an area where you have a lot of great detectors, you know, maybe you don't need to have IOCs in there because you've got a lot of other ways to look for something. If you have something, you know, where you just cannot pick some, you know, a particular adversary's actions up, unless you've got the IOCs, you're probably going to want to leave them in there longer. So I think even for IOCs or something else, it's not an easy, like, oh, you rotate off after 18 months or 3 minutes or whatever it is. You have to think about it from your whole collection strategy and your whole alerting strategy and figure out where it fits.
Yeah. So where a platform's useful is, you know, along with the campaign idea, if you find that your organization is trying to figure out patterns and trending over time, and your traditional incident response data is not giving you that information, that's when you start looking at maybe we need this more sophisticated way of analyzing. Because really a tip is all about that, is where, what else can I analyze? How can I bring in more data sources, different data sources, and compare them with our data that we already have? So that's what a tip buys you. It's more sophisticated analysis that you can do. The other point I wanted to make is there's a lot of security operations centers out there who pull in CTI and then don't use it. So
let's talk about, I want to talk about that.
Okay.
That's one of the elephants in the room. One of the things I've seen many SOCs do is to stay in the newsletter business. They'll have one person, and all that person does is read the news, summarize it, and redistribute it. And that's all the SOC sends out to its constituents every day. And it's sort of like, where is the relevancy, right? Why do I care about this? Ooh, it sounds sexy. So what?
Yeah, so when you're figuring out whether you want CTI or not, it was back to the question you actually brought up early, John, which is who uses CTI? An incident lead or an incident responder, they're not going to use a newsfeed. You know, they don't even care about that. They're probably going to be interested in the streaming data that looks like their environments or, you know, sister SOCs. So you really have to think about your audience, which CTI is all about. Who is your audience and what do they need it? Newsletters get read maybe by some executive somewhere, right?
And do you want them to call you? Like, yeah. Right? Like you put something in there. Oh, this is really bad. Great. They called at 7 o'clock tonight. What are you going to tell them that you're doing about it? This is actually.
Although there is a case to be made for, hey, there's something going on in the news. You're going to do your investigation. You're going to understand what's happening. And you're going to put out that information to calm the waters or to tell them that something has happened. And so you do have to balance the fact that sometimes you do want to pass information on. So
yeah,
it's not all bad news.
You took the words out of my mouth. Actually, that's one of the ways I like to see CTI show up in newsletters like that is to be a lightning rod. Hey, we saw this. We read it. We're doing X about it.
Yeah. And just to comment on the news cycle, and this is from a lot of years of experience, we used to be ahead of the news cycle. Like if you saw it in the news, we already knew about it for months. The news cycle today and currently is there's no way that SOCs can understand everything that's going around them. And they may see something in the news that actually does affect them, which is incredible to me.
I'm going to use buzzwords for a second, and I'm sorry about it. It will be really interesting to see how this develops over the next couple months as more vendors and more SOCs use our most favorite buzzword, right? That right now are these large language models to summarize some of this information.
Yeah. Yeah. We're definitely starting to see some very, very interesting things come out of that space. Maybe you'll have to do a special episode on that as more and more of that shows up. One of the things I did want to ask about in relation to what just came up there is the SOC, the group that's going to be doing this, because some organizations will have CTI as like a SOC duty, or at least the people that do it as part of the SOC, or they may have it as a totally separate thing, or they may totally outsource it. Are the analysts doing this kind of work? Do we have dedicated people? Who's going to be responsible for doing this kind of thing?
I think the answer is yes to all of those, just again, depending on your organization. You know, a very broad brushstroke is larger organizations will tend to have a more independent intelligence team. Smaller organizations often have intel as an additional duty is assigned. I've been working with a number of smaller SOCs, though, where they are now finding this to be such an integral part of what they do that they are, even on a small team, looking to hire somebody who is experienced in this space, or, you know, take somebody, transform them into this space, even if it's just a halftime role, trying to say, you know, there's a multiplying factor to this, that if we can get this intelligence, that means that we are more likely to find the things we're looking for, less likely to be looking for what we're not looking for, and that it's worth putting the time in versus triaging a whole bunch of stuff that is just garbage. This actually can make that a little bit more clear. So I am seeing smaller teams that are starting to bring in dedicated analysts. The other thing to keep about is sometimes threat intelligence is not just done within a SOC. You may have intelligence that's done in other parts of your company for other reasons. And I've seen some confusion in terms of what that team might be able to do. Like, should they become your cyber threat intelligence as well as your corporate intelligence organization? And that's a really interesting discussion in terms of what level of technical expertise does a threat intelligence analyst need to have versus something else. But I've seen that as well, where you sometimes are going to get other parts of your company that are doing this that are even outside of kind of that IT realm. So as usual, it depends. Lots of different ways you can do this. But that's a great point, John, is that not the intelligence doesn't always happen within your core SOC team.
Yeah, and I think that feeds perfectly into something Kat mentioned she wanted to say as well. Before we were recording, you had mentioned the, you know, it's not all tech information, right? There's some other kind of aspects of this. Can you tag on to what Ingrid was saying there and kind of, you know, continue on with that thought and explain to the users what you were, or I mean the listeners, what you were thinking with that statement?
Right. So bringing together these different kinds of information, just back to that thought of, so Ingrid's mentioning business intelligence. If you have a business intelligence unit, I mean, I got excited. I was like, really? People do that now? Because I would immediately be over there in their organization saying, what do you guys do? and so where the rubber meets the road is about how do you translate what a traditional intelligence analyst does into the technology? And that's the hard part. That's why you really need to you need a technologist there who can translate and say, oh, okay. So when this point of sale system hits this malware, this is what that looks like. They're trying to collect this information and put all the pieces together. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what I was thinking, you know, along the lines of where is the holistic picture of threat intelligence, you know, starting and ending. So, yeah, absolutely. Carson, did you have something as well?
I do. I have feelings. I usually do.
Share them.
I have always been a strong advocate that the cyber threat intelligence function, if one exists, needs to be in the SOC. Going along with what Ingrid stated, that might be a separate team and it might not, depending on how big and sophisticated you are. I have found with SOCs where the cyber threat intel function sits somewhere else in the enterprise, it becomes terribly disjoint and self-serving from operational realities, and I strongly advised against it. Here's a caveat to that, however. There are other areas in the enterprise that may be very related to the SOC and its intel function, and that is an opportunity for collaboration. Let me give you a very concrete example. Let's say you as an enterprise have a commerce and payment system that interfaces directly with customers, right? Direct sales. There's going to be fraud in that commerce system. And the way adversaries perpetrate and perpetuate that fraud is going to have some overlap with ordinary cyber threat intel, right? Where are they coming from? What are they doing? What are their motivations? Once they have succeeded in their fraudulent payment or intentional non-payment, what are they then doing through the enterprise's capacity that they've then purchased, right? Or the things they purchased, what are their motivations? And that's an opportunity for the people doing threat intel and hunting and whatnot in the SOC to collaborate with that other team. So just because I advocate for threat and cyber threat intel being inside the SOC doesn't mean there won't be other types of threat intelligence apparatuses elsewhere, particularly in larger enterprises.
So believe it or not, I totally agree with that. When I was getting excited about business intel, what I immediately thought is the SOC could really use that information. So I right should on. Have finished my thought there. And actually, I think it's really important that security analysts that you're in a SOC don't just focus on the technology information. So if there's nothing else that you take away from today's conversation, is that the universe is much bigger than technical information within a SOC, and that TTPs aren't the only answer, and they aren't the only way of informing how you do correlation and look at your business. If you look at banking and what banks do to do fraud detection and that kind of stuff, they put data together, such as where you're physically located, with a time of day with your credit card, and then they come up with something and call you, right? This doesn't look like you, is it, right? It's looking at these non-traditional ways of how your business unit runs and augmenting your current TTPs and how you do things with other data, other information. That's what I mean about intelligence and information informing your decisions in a SOC.
Gotcha. And how do you feel about, in terms of collecting all of this and putting together a big picture like that, attribution? Is that something that for every SOC, are we trying to say like, oh, it was that country, right? Or are we just trying to back up a little bit from that? What should we expect, you know, as the average organization that's not like a government with access to wide-ranging data?
We spent a lot of time, as with many topics, talking about this. And in the book, and what we landed on is really the difference between association and attribution. And really, for a SOC, most SOCs, again, outside the government, really don't need to know, hey, it was this particular person behind the keyboard sitting in this city, in this country, whatever else. But what you do need to know is, hey, it was likely this group or this piece of malware or this particular thing, because that gets you into that operational phase of, so therefore we know this is their next step, or these are the tools that they use, or this is how we could go discover them. So it is important to have the context, but you know, we all know that cyber intelligence naming schemes have gotten a little bit out of hand. So whatever particular naming scheme you choose to use, you know, or something else, like, leave that to the people who want to do it. Focus on what does that actually mean to you? And again, the actions that you can take based on that, or what you should be looking for in the data based on it, versus thinking about, oh, I must know it's this particular, you know, person in that particular desk.
Yeah. And our goal in discussing attribution versus association here is there's a real lot of energy in security operations about, I don't need to do attribution. I just need to do this blocking activity. You know, and what we're suggesting is it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be good enough to, you know, augment what you're doing when it comes to response and taking actions in your environment. So that's why we came up with this idea of, why don't we call it association rather than attribution?
I would, one of the motivations for that, don't just think about it in terms of the context of that specific incident, about what level of association or attribution we're going to do. Think about it in the context of seeing that adversary again, thinking about, are they doing the same thing this time versus that time? And what am I doing different this time versus that time? Doing the same thing over and over again might be fine if they're not getting that far along in the kill chain. Maybe it's not. Depends on what your motivations are.
And I actually want to bring up a point here that we talk about adversaries as, you know, a thing, an adversary does something. But especially when you're talking about financially based crimes, a lot of times it's a series of different groups. You might have an initial access, you know, broker, and, you know, they're working on an affiliate program where they're getting paid for getting that initial access. And then you have somebody else who does the next phase, and somebody else comes in and does ransomware or does whatever they're doing. So it is important to understand how kind of how these groups work together and what their different roles are and where they come from. And so that, again, goes to why you need to understand kind of the strategic landscape of things that are important to you. And why you do need to have that, you know, association of knowing how they interact with each other and therefore what you can expect. But again, you don't need to know who's actually behind the keyboard from a
that reminds me of something really important. When we walk into environments, particularly those that are not well protected, or we think there's a major intrusion in, don't just assume it's just one adversary. It might be multiple. And don't assume one single adversary owns the entire kill chain. Anyone who's been looking at this data for a long time will tell you it may be one organization that's acquiring compromised credentials and they're selling it to someone else. Don't forget about that.
And that's one of the points of having a threat intelligence platform, right? Is like, maybe you see the same piece of malware that allowed them in, but then things diverge wildly, right? And then if you see enough kind of commonality across different things, you might be able to say like, oh, this is the entry vector group A uses versus group B, but then they pass it on to group C, and then we see some similarities there. Without the ability to really organize all of that information, like, you'd never be able to put that kind of stuff together. Definitely some important kind of organizational aspects to even being able to figure that kind of stuff out, because otherwise it's, you know, it's already incredibly complex. One of the other things discussed in the book I wanted to ask about was, it's table 12, the cyber threat analyst artifacts. So if you have a threat intelligence team or if you don't, regardless, I guess, could you speak a little bit about how you might interact with them and the types of threat intelligence reports that would exist? You know, everything from long form to short form reports and all that kind of stuff. Like, what are we largely dealing with here, and what are we to expect from a threat intelligence team in terms of the format of some of these outputs?
Well, I think the answer is it depends. that's only half joke. Cyber threat intelligence always goes back to the audience that you're trying to serve. So if you're feeding correlation and incident response, you're likely going to put that in some sort of machine readable format to ingest into something else. If you're trying to write to your executives about, here are all the threats that we're seeing to try to get more money for a budget, that's a nice, glossy, pretty report or a PowerPoint that's very short, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Catherine took many of the words out of my mouth, as she usually does.
Sorry.
No. Oh, cool. One of the things to think about in terms of what a threat intel shop puts out is it may not be product that team is responsible for just by themselves. Let me give you a very concrete example. Building summary reports after an incident may often have a very strong threat intel component. So it may be the people who do threat intel and the people doing incident response coordination who co-author that. And it may be only a single slide or a single page or something like that, a single picture with some words on it to describe what we saw so we know what to do about it next time. So as Catherine stated, it always goes back to, you know, what our intention is and who is our audience.
And I'd say, you know, in the last podcast, we talked about kind of the incident management lifecycle, and you really want to think about intelligence across that whole lifecycle as well. So there are things that you can put out in that preparation and, you know, prevention phase, which is, hey, we found out this information, we can put a tipper in, we can create a detector, we can do other types of things. Hey, there are things that are actually going on with an incident. Well, we should have reports or profiles or things where the incident responders can actually go in and learn about how this adversary that we know is important to us works so that they can make better decisions when they're looking through the data. As Carson was just talking about, it can be part of writing up that reporting, doing part of the things. And then it comes into your lessons learned at the end, where you actually want to think about, hey, did we even know that adversary was somebody that was on our model? Do we need to update our threat model? Is this somebody we need to get more information about? Is this somebody that we can now protect against differently as we start the cycle over? So threat intelligence happens throughout everything that your SOC is doing through that whole life cycle.
There's one other point I'll make here that I just came to my mind is both in terms of the work that the SOC does and the analytic product it provides, we always must be cautious about not creating shelfware. Specifically, the SOC can spend a lot of time doing intricate forensic analysis of an incident purely for the purpose of saying, yup, it was adversary B again. Like, we've seen this 30 times in the last 3.2 nanoseconds. Like, a lot of times this can feel both laborious and a waste of time. If it is, don't do it, right? I've seen SOCs trim a very large percentage of their overall analytic workflow by simply saying, why are we doing this to ourselves? Let's stop.
Yeah, I think I've seen that advice given in the form of a presentation. I think it was Chris Cochran that did a presentation on what he called the EASY framework. And I think in that presentation, he said something to the effect of, you know, if I'm making threat intelligence, I'm going to hand it to you. And then I'm going to ask, what are you doing with it? And if you don't have a very good answer, I might not do that thing anymore, right? You know, regardless of whether I'm misquoting or not, right? That's kind of the thing I think you're getting at there is if you realize you're creating work and that work has no effect on the environment, doesn't make anything better, right? That's a good sign that maybe your time is better spent elsewhere, right?
Exactly.
So I think to close it up here, the only question I had left, unless we had anything other kind of burning statements we wanted to make, is I did want to ask everyone, what are the things that you're looking at every day in terms of just staying high level, you know, situational awareness? Are there podcasts you listen to? Are there news sources you go to, social media, anything really? How are you keeping yourself up to date on a daily basis?
I can answer this. And I'm not going to name any specific, you know, news sites, though I have my favorites and there are a number of aggregators out there, for example. is where I'm focused every day are threat intel and threat, you know, cyber news generally that will translate into my team needs to go do a thing. We need to go deal with a new, and usually that takes the form of a new vulnerability that is out or a new campaign that is particularly pertinent to the infrastructure I'm running. And those, if I'm looking at that right, that translation from news or intel to I need to go spin an incident is going to be non-zero, and it's going to be non-zero on a cadence that says I'm looking at the right stuff.
Perfect. Anyone else want to chip in on the daily keep yourself up to date kind of a cycle?
Yeah. So I mean, I use a kind of an aggregator. I bring everything in. I just do quick scans through, you know, what is likely, because I work for an MDR right now. So we're looking across customers across multiple industries. So I'm really focused on what are the big things that are likely to be impactful across everything. Also, as a manager, I'm looking for things that are different than the day-to-day tactical types of things. So I'm looking for the, what are we going to get questions on? What is a customer going to want to know? What are people going to be looking for? And then honestly, internally, like one of our Slack channels is, you know, security nerds. And that's where everybody posts like, hey, I saw this, I saw that, this is cool, something else. Like, you know, it's, I almost don't have to have my own separate news feed because so much stuff shows up there. But what I look for is, has more than one person mentioned this? Like, is this something that's just kind of getting a little bit of traction? To Catherine's earlier point of, there are plenty of things that show up in the news now that you have not seen or you're not aware of until they start hitting the news cycle. We also, you know, have Twitter feeds that we bring in. We have all kinds of other stuff that we bring in, and we're looking for something where there's a little bit of a buzz around it, a little bit of a, hey, this might turn into something where we need to take an action. Because it is popping up. Now you have to be careful because a lot of these aggregators, it's the source comes out and then you have like 15 different organizations that report on that source. So you try and get back to, that's one thing I would say is try and figure out how you can get to source reporting versus the broader news agencies that are re-reporting something that's already been seen.
Awesome.
Yep. Yes. And I do all that as well without going into the specifics of the aggregators and all that. and also I, look for what actions can I take to do these bigger moves. So like strategically, are there some things that I need to do to preempt something that, or guess to anticipate something might happen? One thing I'll say about incident response is you never know which incident's going to be the big one, so to speak, the one that everybody's concerned about, you know? So keeping your pulse on what's happening outside is super important because you never know when it's going to like personally affect you suddenly. So that's the only thing I would add to that.
And I actually want to say one more thing is we've talked about CTI as a discipline, which it has become about being, you know, small, big, everything else. But the fact is in many SOCs, even if you don't think you're doing CTI because your analysts are reading news reports every day. They're processing information. They're going, hey, this is cool. This is new. Hey, have we looked at this? And so just be aware of what you natively have as a capability based on the curiosity of your own analysts and leverage that as well. You know, make sure that you're taking advantage of everything you can with it.
Perfect. All right. I think that brings us to the end here. Lots of really rapid fire good stuff here. I hope we hit what people are looking to learn on CTI. I know I feel like I did. So awesome conversation here. To wrap it up, you know, I think the theme of this whole thing, Carson summed up very well near the end there, is like, look for stuff where it's my team needs to go do a thing, right? Not just we're collecting to collect, we're collecting because we want more things in our threat intelligence platform. It's stuff that you can actually make a decision on and drive some kind of useful action that makes security better. So on that final thought, I will say goodbye to everyone. Thank you again for joining us. We're going to be back next week with Chapter 7, which is Select and Collect the Right Data. So we will catch you all then. And thank you again for listening to Blueprint. See you, and thank you.